Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello and thank you very much for tuning into episode 1.9 of The Ball Bags podcast. We've a lot to get through this week, so in addition to fan favourites, player of the week, and have you seen this, we will also be covering the English Premier League and the managerial merry-go-round, the NFL and the incident involving Aaron Rodgers and the, let's call it, a faux vaccination. And then we'll also have a quick look over the NBA to date and kind of have a view further on with this. Without much further ado, I'm delighted to be joined by the chief of controversy. It's the coach.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. Can't complain. I'll address it quickly. The bottom feeder athlete won't be with us for the next few weeks. He is he's going through a transitional stage in his life and he's rediscovering his body. Put it that way. No, I'm joking. He's moving gaff and he's a bit all over the place. So he'll be back to us when he's a more stable setup.
I heard he was acting as Aaron Rodgers' doctor, but look, we'll come back to that later.
We can touch base on that later on. So, without much further ado, this week's Player of the Week in partnership with The Athletic. Who have you picked this week, Coach?
Andrew Conway. Thought it was a fantastic performance last week. It's the Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese. But yeah, I thought he was spectacular. Obviously, we take the spark away from Johnny Sexton's 100th cap and scoring try and machete or whatever it is that he received.
Sword.
That's the one. But Andrew Conway, yeah, he's not that old. What is he? He must be 30. So yeah, like, we'll get the World Cup out of him. But I thought it was a very of age performance, very classy performance.
The only thing was. The caveat against that is obviously it was a poor Japanese performance.
Poor Japanese. Let's I think they've played, what, 3 games since the World Cup?
No, it's always a huge issue for Japan in general, in between World Cups.
Yeah.
Like they play like an Asian tournament, which just isn't that strong. But in addition, COVID obviously on top of that. So,
but hopefully it'll bode well for us coming into the weekend.
Yeah. Look, maybe we have a chance against New Zealand. Maybe I'm over-optimistic. The bottom feeder athlete had sent through a suggestion. Strange one as a United fan, but he had gone with Yao Cancelo. Now, two goal involvements. The cross for the own goal did come from Yao Cancelo as well. Yeah.
He's just thinking XG rating, that's all.
Yeah. Was it much of a contest? Unfortunately for United fans, I don't think it wasn't. I don't think City got out of second gear. I think they never looked laboured. They never looked under pressure. What more do you say?
Was that performance worse than the Liverpool performance? That seems to be the thing at the moment. They're going, yeah, it was definitely worse. Was it?
I think it was, because I think Liverpool went for the juggler. And I think Liverpool, look, maybe Liverpool didn't hit fifth gear, but they definitely hit fourth gear, whereas I don't think City got out of second gear.
Yeah, it's a strange one, because anyone you seem to ask, or the pros or whatever, you listen to various podcasts or radio shows, they all seem to say that City are just City. They probably, not that they don't have a chance in the league, but they're not in people's top two. Everyone kind of seems to be saying Chelsea, Liverpool at the moment. Well, that was probably up until the West Ham game, to be fair, but
yeah. But then Chelsea obviously drew as well at Burnley. There's been some strange results the last two weeks. I know City had lost to Palace the weekend before.
It's been great for us, for fans, though.
for the neutral, yeah, and you, genuinely, sides dropping points generally does
pave the way for an interesting title race down the stretch.
Go on, Sass, who's yours then?
Mine was Josh Allen, not of Buffalo, but of Jacksonville. First time in NFL history that a quarterback has been sacked by a linebacker of the same name. Interesting tidbit for you.
I thought that was a funny one. All the memes going around the Spider-Man was good.
He did actually have a brilliant performance as well. So it was tackles was forced fumbles, tackles for a loss. It was brilliant. But it was Jacksonville's first victory on US soil. That obviously discredits the London performance. In 21 games. Something absolutely outrageous. It's Trevor Lawrence's first win in America, in the NFL, but it was a terrible game. But I just thought, for the storyline alone, throw him in there, throw people off guard. And there was one fan nomination, sorry to say it to you, but Luka Doncic for his buzzer beater against the Celtics on the weekend. He is a special talent, and it was a good ending to actually a good match. I know you're struggling with the Celtics this season, but yeah, he's worthy of a mention. So taking it all into consideration, if you had to pick one of them, who would be yours? It's actually not, to be fair, when you look at
it's a terrible week.
Yeah, we probably could have pushed a bit harder and got probably better players.
Again, I think it's not Cancelo. You kind of expected him. Like you don't reward someone. You don't reward the postman for delivering post, do you? Like, so.
Yeah, but then someone keeps fucking shouting Mohamed Salah every week. So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's when he goes above and beyond.
Against Watford.
Yeah. It's between Allen and Conway.
Yeah, I think.
Is it,
do you know,
premature
what?
Of us to give it to Conway?
I'm happy to go. I'm more than happy to go with Luka.
Let's go Luka.
Yeah, we'll shout out to the fan. I guess his name escapes me. Sincere apologies. But if I can edit it back in, I will. Right, so moving on. Agree to disagree this week. So, look, obviously, we're down to two of us. So, we have three topics that we've come up with between ourselves. And we'll kind of brush through them as best we can. So, coach. Yes, to date, we've had 5 sackings in the Premier League this season. So, Daniel Farke, no games to go to an international break. Javier Munoz, 0 games to go to an international break. Dean Smith, 0 games to go to the international break. Nuno Espirito Santos, 1 game to go to an international break. And Steve Bruce, he's the anomaly because there's obviously other factors at play, but 3 games to go to an international break. My question to you is, has the international window put a definitive sacking period on managers in the Premier League? And if so, why? And is it short-sighted?
I think it needs to come. It depends on the circumstances. Like, it is the most natural time to get rid of a manager because they have time to get to grips with the club and so they have before players return back. is it short-sighted in the respect of the managers that have gone this season? I think possibly in a couple of I think Dean Smith probably had enough to turn it around.
You've made him sell his best player, and then you've sacked him.
Yeah, like that's not his fault. I also think he's one of the best in history. He's probably one of the best championship managers. Stand to be corrected in terms of stats, but I'm pretty sure he's up there.
You look at what he did with Brentford as well. But obviously, that was before they got promoted and like that. But yeah.
So Dean Smith for me, and I think this morning he might have been linked to Norwich, so it'd be straight, like, you know, it'd be, you know, in and out.
They must have known, because the Farke sacking came first, didn't it? So they must have known he was.
Yeah, and if you look at that realistically, Norwich are going down no matter who's in there. So if you're that's a bit of long term sightedness, I'd say, from Norwich, which is if they go down, they're sure to bounce back up with Smith, you would have thought. The Farke one I thought was interesting because he is really, he seems to be really, really quality, but they are just that yo-yo side. And I just feel that they never, depends on who makes the signs, obviously, but they never really got those senior, mature players to come in to just plug holes. Like, John, that kind of to keep them up that knows the Premier League. There's no one really they're a young squad. Like,
I think they need to break the cycle to make those signings, if that makes sense. As in, like, yeah, if you're a player, yeah, well, it's a year in the Premier League with Norwich and I'm back then in the Championship. It's a hard sell.
They could probably do it the likes of getting like a Johnny Egan in at the back end of Leicester's career, like some people like that, to just put staples in and bring that culture. What's that?
Johnny Evans, did you say?
Johnny Evans, sorry, it's Johnny Egan I said, sorry. Yeah, Johnny Evans. People like that that just be staples within the squad that have Premier League experience. That's probably what they're missing more so than the manager. But like, there's too much player power now, I think. If you go back 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I don't think that was happening.
Yeah.
I know we had Bilic. Was it last season? December 16th? Or was it the season before? It's hard to remember now with COVID. But yeah, and I think Santos... Arguably, go on.
But arguably, look at Bilic's sacking, you'd say it was the best decision they've made in a long time.
Oh, 100%. But I'm more talking about how early it was. Like, he was fired, didn't he? Beat City. He drew with City, I think. And then got sacked after the game.
Look at Daniel Farke, his first win of the campaign. And yeah, he was sacked, I'd say, within the hour afterwards. So, ultimately, I think when the decision was made, I just think it seems as if, as we approach an international window, we should be looking around the houses and saying, well, who's actually under pressure and who could go this weekend?
But particularly, like, if you think of someone like, it's always the same clubs as well, isn't it? Like Frank de Boer, remember him at Crystal Palace? And four games in, he was gone. But I think the one that sticks out for me that probably deserved more time, and it's hard to say, but Santos probably deserved more because he's that type of manager that I think he was working on a bigger project, but the club and the board and the fans wanted instant success, and unfortunately Tottenham isn't the club that's going to get instant success. I'm looking 10 years down the line before Tottenham do anything again.
I think if you look at how his contract was structured, it was kind of a renewal every year. Now, I know, look, it's professional sports. A contract is not worth the piece of paper it is written on.
Yeah.
But I do think he was always a stopgap. And I think they'd, from reports you'd read or whatever, they'd gone hard after Conte in the summer. His price was too high. And they said, you know what, we'll fill it with Nuno. And we'll see how the chessboard will play out. And then they realised, look, I don't think it's going to work. And they obviously paid a bit more for Conte than what he'd asked for in the summer, which is funny because City will pay a bit less for Kane in January as they offered in the summer. But I just think the international break, I think boards sometimes to go, well, look, we're 50-50 on this guy. If we don't want him, let's get rid of him now. And they kind of, it seems a bit more snap. Like, the real one for me is the, I hope I'm saying this right, Javier Muñoz one. Like, that was a good start for Watford. 10 months
into
that
one career. Shocked everyone, I think.
So,
I'm just thinking, like, when you think of the tables and how many games we've got played, we've got 11 games played, so you've got 27 to make a difference. Like, it's possible. All of those managers, with the exception of whoever comes into Norwich, can turn it around. You would have to think.
I still think there's enough quality in Villa for them to turn that around. I still think Dean Smith probably was the man to do that. They probably needed to maybe bring one or two good, like, there's still some very good players at Villa. So
Newcastle is probably the funny one that, okay, they've got, I think with financial fair play, they're only allowed to spend in the region of 96 million, I think, in January. Is 96 million enough to make a difference to keep them up?
So from what I read, like, obviously Unai Emery, was favoured for a job, but when he turned it down, it's funny how the narrative switched. So the narrative had been that he was the favourite because of his resume, but Eddie Howe was the second kind of favourite based on the proposal he had, and his proposal was players he could sign with X budget, B budget. Like, he'd buy four different budgets in January, players he could sign, systems he could run, whereas Unai Emery was very much, this is who I am, this is what I've done, this is where I believe I can take you. It was pretty much a, he was getting the job on a CV. Eddie Howe, yeah, a close second, apparently. Now this is how the narrative switched, was based on what he believed he could do to Newcastle. I do think Newcastle fans will be thankful that they didn't get Emery, that they got Eddie Howe instead. I think all he needs to do is get them 17th place.
Yeah, it's easier said than done, but you'd imagine Watford will fall in there, don't you? Like, here's one for you. Who do you think's next to go? Because United have pretty much said yet again that we will be sticking with Ole. Was that this morning I saw that, I think? Or maybe yesterday?
You say that, but then I do think the Glazers as a board are very susceptible to kind of fan protests and stuff like that. So I do think if the noise keeps, I think... I was talking to a diehard United fan and he said, Ole is a genius. His management is absolutely terrible when there's no one available, and the minute someone comes available, he seems to start pulling a few results out of the bag. There's no one else available. Like, the United go for your prediction of Coleman? Don't know.
Yeah, but they've missed out on Conte now, like, so I don't know what you do. The rumour is obviously that Rodgers has been spoken to. I don't know if you saw that one, so it's a wait and see. Woodrow Rodgers apparently wanted to wait till the end of the season, but he didn't do it at Celtic, did he, when he could have won the league trophy? So why would he do it now?
Maybe, like, Rodgers for me, maybe. But, like, it all changed so quickly. Like, if you go back and listen to, I think it's the second episode we did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was after first international break. Arsenal just beaten Norwich, first game back from the international break, and you would have said he was under significant pressure. He's not anymore. Yep. Rightly or wrongly, I'm not debating that, but effectively 5 to 7 weeks
turns it around.
You can turn it around significantly. And now he looks like a genius. Not saying he is, just saying, look, as an Arsenal fan of the last decade, I've lived through a lot of these false dawns, so I wouldn't be too optimistic, but
If you zoom out and look at it though, like, if Rodgers hadn't been such a likable guy at Leicester, now I don't know if anyone thinks that, but like he seems to be a decent coach and the fans seem to like him, but they're 12th. Like, he should probably be under pressure.
But you see, pre-2015, Leicester in 12th is a great fucking season.
Yeah.
So Leicester fans, young and old, appreciate the hard times and enjoy the good times more. They know they're not built. Effectively, it's a game theory model in that they're just trying to maintain the relevancy. Some seasons, they'll be in the Champions League spots, and some seasons, they'll be down in the middle of the table. But once they're staying in the Premier League, that's how they win, effectively, on their model.
But, like, they do have an ageing squad as well, and they don't seem to be doing much investment. I know they got your man Daka up top, but, like, Vardy's tank needs to go soon. It has to. And it's only built up on Red Bull and chewing gum or something.
Absolutely, but Harvey Barnes is a decent footballer. Yuri Tielemans as well is very young.
Tielemans will be gone, though, won't he? Surely.
Yeah, they need to cash in. How much are they going to get from him? And what can they turn that into?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I suppose to kind of draw a close to this segment, is it dangerous how willing they are to sack managers at international windows?
Not at this stage, I don't think, with 27 games to go. I think see once you get to Christmas, that's the tough part, because it's game after game. So I think it's now or never in terms of the season. This international break, it's now or never. After now, you're asking for trouble.
Okay, fair enough. Okay,
would you agree?
I just think, look, I think it's inevitable that the rate of managerial sackings in the Premiership seems to ramp up every single season, which is fine. But you do have to give a manager a chance to embed his systems and build the side he wants. Like, the one thing you would say about, and I'm being very biased in this, the one thing you would say about Arteta, despite the struggles he's had over, say, the first two seasons, all his players have hit. Anyone who signed has, with the exception of maybe Odegaard, has been, I've said this before, have relatively been good signings.
Yes.
So, if you're, like, say, Munoz, Nuno, to a lesser extent, Farke and Smith, and look, we'll leave Steve Bruce out of it, but the two Latin heritage managers, short term, so both 10 months or less, how many of the squad, I mean, it's the players in that squad were their signings?
Yeah, very true.
So I do think
very true.
Can be a double-edged sword.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Right, moving on.
Yes, sir. Aaron Rodgers this week. So Aaron Rodgers and the faux vaccination. Do you think he will be held accountable, or should he be held accountable? And what kind of message do you think it's sending out to the league? Well, not only that league, but the whole of American sports leagues, I think, is probably more fitting.
Should he be held accountable? Yes. It's a clear violation of kind of the league's policy. So, basically, the whole...
Explain this one to me now. Yeah, go on, explain this to me now.
The protocols are, say, so if you're a unvaccinated player, that's fine. But you have to wear a mask the duration of your time in the facility, indoors. You have to either wear a mask or complete media interviews on Zoom. He done neither for the whole year. So far, we're, 10 weeks in now?
Mm-hmm.
He also claimed he was immunized, which was basically he consulted with Joe Rogan, famous podcast, and did his research and had like a herbal treatment against COVID, basically, effectively, but didn't actually get the vaccination. So he should be held accountable because he has. He also had this big, massive. I don't know if you've seen it, if you follow Enton on social media. You might have come across memes of him who he basically grew his hair for the whole year so he could dress up as John Wick for Halloween, which is a bit childish maybe. And I do like Rodgers. I generally have up until this point liked Rodgers. And then he's contracted COVID not too long after this Halloween party, so that would be susceptible. So,
who should be the one policing this? Like, he just held up his hands and went, oh, I'm immunised. But, I mean, who... And they obviously did regular interviews and stuff, but who should have been the one to go, well, show me your COVID passport there, mate?
It's a combination of a few things. The Packers were... I don't know if asleep at the wheel is the correct term, or if it was a case of, well, look, it's Aaron. And despite the bad summer we've had, and despite the fact he's definitely leaving us this summer, he is the face of the organisation. And... we need him present at media interviews, and we kind of want as much out of him as we're going to get out of him this season. So we'll try not to rock the boat too much in the mid-season, because he's not afraid to step down. He's not afraid. He's a bit of a quirky character, to put it lightly. He's not afraid to speak his mind. So they kind of, I wouldn't say were asleep at the wheel. I would say they had a good knowledge of the fact that he wasn't fully vaccinated, but they kind of probably rolled the dice. But the bigger one who's kind of accountable, and this is kind of why the belief is he's not going to be held accountable, is the NFL didn't properly do the full diligence. So the NFL were kind of asleep at the wheel on this one. So that's why, despite all the bombardment, the NFL is very quick to act when they know the player's in the wrong. But when there's a potential that... they might also be in the wrong. Tends to be kind of a quieter deal. It also, and look, they're for two very different reasons. It is worth noting that, but in kind of the American sports media, it's definitely not a good look at how Rodgers has been treated. And I don't mean like commentary and stuff on kind of situation, but I mean in terms of how he's actually been treated by the organization versus how Kyrie Irving, as a male of African American descent, is being treated by the Brooklyn Nets and, to a lesser extent, the NBA. Now, that's kind of New York State specific protocols as to why he's not. And I do kind of agree with Brooklyn Nets and what they've done. They've kind of said, well, look, you can't play the home game, so we're not going to take you on the away games. And that's why he's kind of sitting out. There's also the issue, too, that, like, despite the fact that Kyrie thinks the earth's flat and he's an anti-masker and anti-vaccination, panic, look, whatever, each their own, he's not actually contracted COVID. So
he's locked up in his library, but it looks of it every time he does an interview.
But he has abided by the protocols for someone who's not vaccinated.
And have we seen, excuse my ignorance, but have we seen an interview of Roger since this whole debacle?
He appeared on the Pat McAfee show.
I think he might have done Jimmy Kimmel as well, did he?
Maybe. I know he definitely was on Pat McAfee.
Is it kind of...
Pat McAfee is kind of his best mate. Like, he's a good PR man. Like, he, anytime there's a bit of Aaron Rodgers controversy, he goes on to Pat McAfee. He doesn't get too grilled. He's allowed to be himself, and Pat McAfee will back him and stuff like that. So, I like the podcast, but it's, you've got to take what's said about Aaron Rodgers on that with a pinch of salt.
And is Aaron Rodgers, do you think, taking it seriously?
Did he take it seriously? Is that what you think?
No. Well, is he taking it seriously, I suppose?
No. Absolutely not. He's never taken it seriously in his life.
Well, there's that. And the whole Joe Rogan thing, was that in jest?
No.
So I read articles and I wasn't... I know he said it, but did he...
No, I've read varying articles, so I don't know if it's concrete evidence, but allegedly he had a 3-hour Zoom call with Joe Rogan discussing the efficacy of vaccines and all the evidence they had, and the efficacy of masks. Yeah. And I do think when quizzed post-testing positive, Aaron Rodgers was able to present a 756-page document to the NFL of, like, non-scientific based rhetoric as to why neither were effective.
Well, just FYI, the Joe Rogan Experience podcast does sell masks that are made in China. So, you know, I wouldn't be taking a whole lot of information from him.
Yeah, great podcast.
Okay.
The Spotify partnership has...
Yeah. So impact. Yeah, I think it really depends on the guest. But look, let's not get into it.
Yeah, true.
And okay, well then, what do you think happens from here on out regarding, like, he can't be the only one. There's a lot of hippie NFL players. So
no, well, there's a lot.
What message is sending, and what happens now?
It'll be interesting to see who the next. See, none of them are really an issue. The issue is if someone catches COVID and we find out that they're actually not vaccinated when they've said they're vaccinated. There's plenty of players who said they're not vaccinated and not going to vaccinate because that's against kind of their beliefs and stuff like that. Like DeAndre Hopkins is an example.
Yes.
But it depends on the circumstances. It depends on who the player is. And if they test positive and they've told us that they're vaccinated and they're not, and it happens to be an African American player, it would be very interesting to see what happens, what the public reaction is to that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's a strange one, and I did like Aaron Rodgers, so I just don't want to see him being a dick.
That's
what he's doing.
it has changed my narrative of Rodgers somewhat, kind of his laissez-faire attitude to it all, and kind of just like he had a huge party in Halloween that he shouldn't have had per Milwaukee would be Wisconsin state laws, so it's getting in against. It's kind of illegal as well, as opposed to just NFL specific issues. But look, we've rambled on about this too much. I suppose, look, make sure you get yourself jabbed. If you don't want to get jabbed, make sure you abide by the protocols, and we'll hopefully get through this all together. The feel-good statement of March and April of 2020 still resides. Let's do this together. Right, moving on anyway.
So stay positive, test negative, kids.
So, been a few weeks now. Still very early days. Don't like to make any too many bold predictions in the NBA post All-Star weekend. Similar to the Premier League at Christmas time, you don't really want to make too many bold predictions or decisions. Same with the NFL after Turkey Day or Thanksgiving Day, which is coming up soon. But myself and the coach said, let's have a look at the early season performers. And why don't me personally come up with three of the early season top performers who we don't envisage maintaining their early season rise to the top. And three early season strugglers, which the coach is going to take, who we see turning things around. So when we go one versus one. So I'll kick it off.
Yes, sir.
My first side that I feel is going to drop, and this is predictable to anyone that's ever listened to me talk tripe on the podcast. Philadelphia 76ers, currently first in the East. Ben Simmons' fiasco doesn't seem to like be going anywhere. Yes, they're number one in the East, but they are a Joel Embiid injury away from being ninth in the East in a fortnight. I don't think they have the talent, like they have the squad depth. I mean, you're looking for stars outside of Joel Embiid. Like, it's Tobias Harris, who hasn't been a great signing for the 76ers. Yeah, they have Danny Green. Is he a star anymore? Definitely not. Seth Curry.
Yeah, but he stepped it up, Seth, I think. End of last season, early this season.
Yeah, he steps it up for patches throughout his career. Like, he's just the player he is. So, delightfully, and anyone who knows me would know I'm delighted to be here saying this to you. 76ers. They're going to drop in the East, and they're going to get bounced in the first round of the playoffs. Thank you. Good night.
The first one I'm going to open the floodgates with is obviously my team, the Celtics. They have to turn it around. They have to. They have to turn it around, don't they?
It's interesting. The trade talk of Jaylen Brown for Ben Simmons is starting to heat up.
I don't know why it is, though.
Yeah.
I don't know why it is. Like you look at the team there. Tatum, Smart's probably been a bit unfortunate. I know, obviously, he came out with that kind of outburst, if you want to call it that. What was it? Two weeks ago now. Like, they've got a strong five, and then I think Peyton Pritchard's been decent. I think Robert Williams's been okay, but the problem is they've all been okay. Mm. And they're not, like, Peyton Pritchard at the back end of last season was phenomenal. Mm. And doesn't see. He had a long summer as well. He played in the summer league, and he also played in a couple of exhibition stuff, which I found very surprising.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, though. It is minutes, but, and he did need minutes to be fair. But I thought he had a very kind of intense back end of the season last year. I'm wondering, are they missing out on Tristan Thomas after he moved on? I know that's a weird thing to say, but something's missing, and Al Horford and Enes Kanter don't seem to be filling the gap or the void.
It's probably coaching.
The new coach.
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably coaching. I think it's.
They probably should have had a bit of strength and stuck.
Still a very young side. Still a very young roster.
It's all yeah, but.
And yeah. I think sometimes, and this is a very hard thing to say because you know much like Jason Tatum, but I do think Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are John Wall and Bradley Beal in Washington. They're talented players. They're all stars,
but they're individuals.
But they're individuals, and I don't think they're a deep run the playoff side at present. I do think they're going to need a trade to get them over the line. We're obviously prefacing all these on the basis that nothing changes. There's no major trade. Ben Simmons doesn't go for half the league. Do you know what I mean? And Philadelphia 76ers has become dominant. Yeah, but I understand that's a. Maybe a very personal choice, but I would say, look, I hope they do. As in, like, I do think Boston, a good Boston side is good for the league too. I think it's one of those sides that,
yeah,
huge fan base, especially this part of the world.
Need a good East Coast side.
Okay, my second side.
Hit me up.
Only side in the West. It's a very harsh one. It's a massive, it's probably a massive stretch, and a lot of people probably would be a bit angry, but I'll explain it to you. So, currently second in the East, the time recording, Utah Jazz. And they have a brilliant roster. They have a brilliant roster. They've got Donovan Mitchell. They've got Bogdanovic. They've got Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, Jordan Clarkson, Royce Neal. Then, look, they've also got Hassan Whiteside. I don't know if he's the kind of player he was a few years ago, or the potential. I don't think he's lived up to the potential he had a few years anyway. And they still have old man Rudy Gay on the bench as well.
Rudy.
I think they have a good roster. I think they're hyper-competitive. I think they're slept on an awful lot. Like, Rudy Gobert, all joking aside about COVID and stuff like that, yeah, look, he's probably one of the best defensive players in the league. Donovan Mitchell can just catch flight. Mike Conley's slept on, as is Jordan Clarkson. Jordan Clarkson's probably the most underrated player in the league, but they just strike me as like what Denver has been the last few years. Like, they'll be excellent regular season. I don't see them dropping the regular season, but they're probably bouncing rounds one and two. I just think they just strike me as that kind of it's a very difficult place to go play as well, Utah as well. Like, the fans are ferocious. But I just have a feeling that they're a bit like what I said about, I'm not gonna say that. But what I am gonna say is, like, they just seem as if they're there for the taking. If they fall to the if they come up against a side that's lower ranked than they probably, their talent suggests, I think they could bounce in the first and second round. Would be my prediction. And the West is stacked.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. You want my number two?
Yeah, give me your number two.
The Bucks. And I'm going to explain why there's no reason to be concerned. They are going back to the top. The reason being is injuries and bad three-point shooting. If you take a glance at the standings from the first little while, you'd be surprised, because they have lost to the Timberwolves and the Spurs, who both obviously would not be kind of considered to make the playoffs. And they lost three in a row in that spell, which is the first time they've had a losing streak that big, which is strange. But the main one for me is on the opening night against the Nets, they had a starting five of Drew Holiday, Grayson Allen, Chris Middleton, Giannis, Brooke Lopez, which is the only time they've played together, and they've only played a grand total of 6 minutes together. How do you feel about that one?
Yeah, well, obviously, like, they had a very long summer last summer.
It's, you know? Yeah, 100%, but I think it's been an injury struck beginning to the season. That last season amongst the leaders in 3-point shooting, and this season, geez, I don't know, but they've been, I think I'm trying to look it up here, through the first 7 games they were 8th in 3-point shooting.
Yeah, so look, they're not a strong 3-point shooting team anyway. They never were. But yeah, I would be in agreement. Like, they're probably looking at the East, they're probably saying Philadelphia's top. Advances against Philadelphia. Miami would be a battle. They are playing a different level of defensive basketball.
Yeah.
Chicago are different, but they're a divisional rival. So we get a few cracks at Chicago, and we let them work out by the playoffs. Washington, yeah. Conveniently enough, I'll talk with them next. Cleveland, they'll stay where they are. The Knicks are the Knicks. Brooklyn Nets, like, they're still a bit of a mess. Toronto, Charlotte is still quite young, and then Boston are struggling. Atlanta, and then obviously it's the Scrags of the division, or the conference. So, yeah, they know they can make a run. They can make a run. So yeah, no, I concur.
Buckaroo.
Okay, so obviously it just touched on there, the Washington Wizards. So they're fourth in the East. They're a strange outfit. So obviously key players from last year have been retained. It's obviously Bradley Beal and Thomas Bryant. Thomas Bryant, I don't think it's going to ever come to fruition as to what they thought he was. They've added in pieces, obviously, in Kyle Kuzma. Has played well to start the season, but, you know, Michael Kardashian chasing in a few weeks' time. Montrezl Harrell, like, he's very, very, like, he was good in, he was good at the Clippers. He wasn't good at the Lakers. He's very streaky. And then Spencer Dinwiddie, who, look, I actually rate Spencer Dinwiddie, but I'm looking at it from more a chemistry point of view. I'm looking at it from more a historical point of view. There's too much on Bradley Beal's shoulders. I think he's phenomenal. He's an all-star, rightly so. But if, given the two sides we've talked about, so you've brought, so like Milwaukee and Boston,
mm-hmm.
over the course of, what have they all played? There's another 72 games, roughly speaking, each left to play. They could be, come end of the season, they could be struggling to lock in the 8th or the 7th seed. I think they have a colossal, not a colossal fall, it would be expected as such, but yeah, they're definitely going to follow it. That would probably be my easiest pick out of the three.
Very good. Okay, so I had to pick one from the West, just to level things out. It was tough. There's a lot of teams underperforming in the West. You can look at the Rockets, who've lost 8 on the bounce. You can look at
the Rockets are at their level. I'll tell you that now.
You look at the Pelicans with Zion, lost 7 on the bounce. The Timberwolves, they're probably at their level. They've lost 5. So it came down for me to the Trailblazers and the Lakers. Okay. It's, some people will say Lakers is like mustard. You have people that love it and people that hate them. It's one of those things. And let's just say age isn't on their side, but they're a team of superstars. If you're going to create a team for Space Jam, this will probably be it. I'll touch on the Trailblazers. What's that?
You're sitting at home on the Xbox, and it's 2K15.
Okay, so early in the day when I was doing a bit of research, I was going with the Trailblazers because I really like Damian Lillard. But they also have a whole lot going on with the GM there at the moment. This being the reason I think they actually can't turn it around. Prior to this, I think probably they could, and Damian Lillard and, you know, Larry Nance and, you know, all of them. I think they could have turned it around, but now with this all coming out in the last couple of days, I'm not convinced anymore. I think that's going to put in the back of the house, it's going to put a lot of shit hitting the fan. So we'll go with the Lakers.
Fair.
Yes, the proverbial.
Yeah, look.
Kind of be, I think the Lakers are just too good. They're just too good to not turn it around. They've way too much experience, way too much maturity. Will they regret not keeping Alex Caruso? Possibly.
The goal.
I think.
Of course.
Anthony Davis is a funny one for me. I want to get your opinion on him because you don't think he's as good as he has been, or can he get back to Pelicans good?
I think for a big man, he's remarkably soft. And I don't mean injury prone, I mean soft. As in, like, sometimes he shirks away from the physicality. And sometimes he's brilliant, but when he hits the ground like he's been shot by a sniper. And he's a big man. And I don't think it sends a great message. I don't think he's as good as is hyped, but it's because of, like, what did he go to the Olympics? Like, he went straight from college to the Olympics, 2008, Beijing. Like he's trademarked his eyebrow. Like, I mean, what does that tell you about a bloke?
It tells me he's disgusting and probably doesn't wash.
Yeah, no, look, I think I'd agree. Like, I've done have a huge amount of time for AD. I do think he's good, but like, I think him being with LeBron has probably made him better in my opinion, in terms of like what I think of him. I kind of would root for him a bit more, being with LeBron and stuff like that. Obviously, I'm a huge Westbrook guy. I understand his flaws, but it doesn't mean I don't enjoy watching him every time I get a chance to. I think the thing about the Lakers, though, and it's rare you see it, it's in glimpses, but it is very early in the season. When they click, my God, do they click. Do they scarily click this early in the kind of partnership and stuff? So I think, as we've said, after All-Star break, they could be there or thereabouts as to what we expected when this experiment came together.
Well, here's one for you. So, Russell Westbrook, we all love the man we all love or love to hate, whichever, he's the king of shithousery if there was going to be one in the NBA, I would say. He's up there. Like, he's, I really enjoyed watching him, and it's always the ESPN clips of him just causing murder. But I read an article with Sports Illustrated saying how they think that Westbrook has now realised his style of play doesn't suit the Lakers. True. Fact or fiction?
True.
Yeah?
But it's the first time he's realised it. So Russ's style doesn't work a lot of places when there's more than one star.
But is this an issue?
Of course it's an issue.
So will he be gone?
But if there's... No, he won't be gone. If there is... Well, what I would say is, if there's anyone with the basketball IQ to overcome Russ's shortcomings and direct him into the best way forward for a basketball team, it's LeBron. Basketball IQ is unmatched.
Okay, but hear me out.
Despite what you
think. What about Russell Westbrook in Boston?
For who?
The Celtics. Oh, no. Trade.
I was hoping it wasn't going to be the Pats, because then I have a few follow-up questions on the Red Sox. I'd be like, what?
I just think that if there was going to be a big... I think the Celtics need something serious, and I think they need that type of player, that kind of... that character, that Rodman, that shithouse, that Joey Barton, like, do you know?
No, because I think he's a point guard, and you have a point guard, and I think... I think what the Celtics need is a dominant big. They need a dominant center.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything that the Celtics can put together in a trade package for us that improves them, if that makes sense. If they're getting Russ back, they're giving up Jaylen Brown or they're giving up Jason Tatum. And I don't think Jaylen Brown and Russell Westbrook, Jason Tatum and Russell Westbrook, is the same as Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum plus another piece. So because of how the contracts are structured, like, because the salary cap obviously, and they're still kind of on the smaller contracts because of their age.
Who did you say Jaylen's linked to it?
Jaylen Brown's linked to Philadelphia for Ben Simmons.
Oh yeah,
which
it's not going
to
do anything.
Let me tell you, I'll be coming to your house with box of Kleenex tissues and some chocolate, and I'll stroke your hair, and we'll get through it if it happens.
Oh, I think you'd be better off with Andre Drummond or something, but I know the Sixers want to get rid of Simmons, don't they? So it's never going to happen.
So
I'll tell you what, though, the Bulls have been magnificent. I hope they can keep it up.
Yeah, it's Chicago. They've kind of timed it well. So obviously the Chicago Bears are a bit of a mess right now because of just how the organization set up, but Justin Fields seems to be coming good. We touched on it last week, just how bad the Black Sox are, and the Black Hawks are, and the Cubs have kind of just blown up the organization as well. So it's kind of a perfect opportunity for a sports side to be dominant in Chicago. There's a lot of fans looking for somewhere to cling to hope, so it's perfect for Chicago right now.
DeMar,
I say it, the less I like it.
Yeah, no, look, it's a good side. They've built something special there. Hopefully for the Ball family.
So yeah, look, hopefully the Celtics can sort themselves out and we could have a real nice Eastern Challenge. And we'd have some more traditional sides, see Chicago Bulls, New York Knicks and Boston Celtics in the playoffs this year. It's a good bit of rivalry between those three sides, given history in the 90s and stuff. But move on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, final bit, the old fan favourite. Have you seen this in partnership with usasports.co.uk? Click the link in the podcast description to peruse the wide variety of US sporting merchandise from our friends at usasports.co.uk. So I don't have a video for you this week. There's loads out there, obviously. But it's more of a stat. So it's the Manning curse. So, I don't know if you've seen this thing. It's a real American thing, but there's a show that runs side-by-side with Monday Night Football, which is Manning Cast. So, obviously, it is two brothers, Peyton and Eli Manning, and they're joined by, traditionally speaking, current NFL players to chat to in Monday Night Football. But look, they've had Marshawn Lynch on. They don't always have current players. But the Manning curse. So, players are currently 0-6 after appearing on the Manning cast. So Travis Kelce was on week 1, lost in week 2. Russell Wilson was on week 1, lost in week 2. Gronk was on week 2, lost in week 3. Matt Stafford was on week 3, lost in week 4. Tommy Brady was on week 7, lost in week 8. And Josh Allen was on week 8, and what happened to him last week? He lost to Josh Allen. So if you had to pick one current player to go on the Manning cast, who would it be?
In the sporting world or NFL?
I'll open it out the sporting world.
Paul Pogba.
I'd probably have Kevin Durant on until the cows come home.
Who in the NFL? I'm trying to think. Is there anyone that I really don't like at the moment?
Do you know what? Look, as someone who bashed Brady out of his life, Jesus, I'm starting to enjoy him more and more since he got out in New England. Probably Dak. Not because I dislike the bloke, but because I want the Cowboys to lose.
Yeah, and then I was going to say maybe Odell, but we don't know where he's going to be. So.
Yeah. Interesting. Chat is heating up that he's going to the Seahawks as well. It's kind of the latest thing I was reading this morning anyway. Which, look, I don't know if that's necessarily a title contender. He did say he wanted to be in a title contender, but don't worry, we'll get that
we'll get that hot off the press.
We'll get that tweet off rapport maybe this evening or tomorrow. We'll see. No fan questions again this week. I don't know what we did to you. Maybe you don't like hearing your own voice on the podcast. Yeah. But if you don't, just pop us a DM. You can do it via Twitter. So that's what you can do it via Instagram, Midseason Snoop. You can even pop me an email, sasquatchscoop@gmail.com, and I'll read it out for you. I'll read it out and do our best to answer for you. So that's all from me.
It's all from me.
Thank you and good night.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.